Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Mino Lion Media presents Conversations with Dr. Ian Smith.
Comedians have always been a special breed. The ability to make us laugh, even when we don't want to laugh. Well, my next guest in the conversation is someone who I hold dear. He's a friend, he's a comedic icon, and he is someone that always has a positive attitude. Please welcome the great comedian, George Wallace. My good friend, George, welcome to the show.
Well, hello there, Dr. Ian Smith. What a wonderful day. I tell you what, I know you got that beautiful smile on your face because that's just you. I've never seen you without a smile, and that's awesome. That is just awesome. Thank you for having me today. What a beautiful day it is.
Well, George, I got to tell you, the reason why I'm smiling so hard is because I don't want to offend other people, but I'm really excited about talking to you. I'm excited to talk to all of my guests, but particularly you. You're one of my favorite comedians. And something you don't know, I've never shared this with you, is I'm a weird kind of comedy guy. Like, I don't like most comedy. It's just I have a very niche type of comedy that I like. And you are the kind of comedian that I truly, truly enjoy. And you just make me laugh. Just like being in your presence makes me laugh. So let's back up for a second. We got a lot of ground to cover in a short period of time. So I want you to do most of the talking. But I want to go back for a minute to some things that I found out that I didn't know about you, by the way, and I found very interesting. First of all, being born in Atlanta, your mother dying when you were 16.
Right.
How was that?
Oh, that was devastating. But let me tell you something about that. There's a purpose for everything in life, okay? So I was 16. I was a kid. I was my last year in high school. And the last words my mom said to me was, baby, that she says, I'm going to the hospital. I won't be back. But don't you worry. Your life has been taken care of. Everything's going to be all right. So I'm thinking, okay, mom, you're going to go to the hospital. I'm thinking as a regular kid, she's going to go to the hospital. That's something you have to say. She will be back. But she was right. And I tell you what, what a blessing she had me prepared for life, man, because as growing up as a kid, Miss Mary Lou Wallace would always say, you're going to learn this, you're going to learn how to cook, you're going to learn how to sew, you're going to learn how to clean. I'm not going to always be around here. You know, just yelling at you, making you doing things, you know, and clean the bathroom. And I would never clean the bathroom on Saturday morning. That was my job, to clean the bathroom. But I wouldn't do it until about 4 o'clock when she had to pop me. Didn't I tell you to clean the bathroom? Why did I wait for the popping, you know? And then all of that time, I could have just cleaned the bathroom, would have been over with. But thank God she taught me everything. And you won't believe how life has been for me. She's saying in the future, everything's going to be all right. Like, because I'm a mama's boy, and had she continued to live, I don't know how to say this. I probably would have stayed in Atlanta, and with peer pressure, I might have gotten a job at General Motors. I'd have been a big time supervisor at General Motors on that line. So, but what I did was I always wanted to be a comedian since I was 6 years old. And so I was prepared. I went to college, University of Akron, Ohio. My first degree was in transportation. And people go, what the hell is a degree in transportation? Sometimes people in the audience shout out, you're a bus driver? I said, you get the hell out of here. I'll throw them out. You get the hell out of here. But transportation, I wanted to be, my parents always loved to travel. And my mom would go one direction, my dad would go another direction because somebody had to be at the house. And I just loved traveling. I used to want to be the guy at the train station, the announcer. You know, like you go to Penn Station, the Sunjeep Express by Greyhounds is now boarding at Gate 2, Zone B, headed for Cleveland, Chicago. I said, I want to be that announcer. But then I wanted to be a comedian also. So I got a degree in transportation and because of travel, I just love traveling. If I wasn't a comedian today, I'd probably be vice president of an airline because I love to fly. I still do 250,000 miles per year. Not this year, only got in 85,000 so far because I'm not traveling as much. But my mom knew things were going to be great. I went to Akron, Ohio, got that degree in transportation. And then after I got that degree in transportation, I was pretty well known on college campus as Governor George Wallace because it was back in the day, my nickname was Governor. So after getting that degree in transportation, I walked out. Everybody knew me at the University of Akron on campus. I took my final and I walked to the major, the main library. And I said, this is the last damn day I'll ever walk out and be in this library. And the librarian said, get out of here, Wallace, get out of here. And 3 weeks later, I had another scholarship to continue my education. I was right back in Akron, Ohio, studying for marketing and advertising again, right back there. So I got a degree in marketing and advertising after that. And because I wanted something to lean back on. And plus, I'm talking about blessings now. Firestone Tire Rubber Company, they had a tuition reimbursement program. So I'm trying to tell you, I've lived on campus for one quarter. I became RA. And you're supposed to be a junior before you even think about becoming an RA. So I was blessed to get scholarship. I was blessed to get a job at Firestone Tire Rubber Company after my mother, in the same year my mother left. And I was making $1.47 an hour at Firestone Tire Rubber Company. $1.47 an hour. I had a car. I was dressed up in a suit every day. I did my thing. I lived on campus. I went to church too much. The only thing I did is went to church too much. I know I could go to hell for saying that, but then I became associated with my sister and another mom. God gave me another mother. Her name is Donna Jim Hill. And when I got to Akron, Ohio, going to church, and the lady said, "You come up. You stay in my lot. You stay in my attic." With the boys. So she had two other boys, and we stayed up on the third floor. You know those big old homes in Ohio. People homes, and she and her husband. So they took me in, and they became my parents. Real parents. Really parents. I don't know how that happened. To this day, I talked to her last night every week. She's still my mother, and she's 90 years old, and her family is my family. My whole big family came together. That's how I met them through my family in Ohio. But we're just talking about blessings right now, and I'll get back. I'll let you guys have another question. So, my mom died, and then things were prepared for me. And I have 3 degrees, and I may have paid $4,000 for 3 degrees. And then I sold rags after college in Cleveland College, real rags. I sold the ShamWow back in 1972, before it even had a name. And I was making tons of money at ShamWow. So I was rags to riches. And then after I sold rags, I became vice president of the world's largest outdoor advertising agency. And that's all the billboards and the spectaculars you see at Times Square. I was vice president of that, and then once I was selling advertising, I went to the comic strip Catch a Rising Star, and I said, "By the," and I was selling them advertising to put comic strip on the buses in New York City, and I did that. And as I was walking up, I said, "By the way, I do a little comedy act." I was always had comedy in my head, and they said, "Well, come back tomorrow night on Thursday night in an audition." I did, and I've been on stage every night since then. That's a little wrap up. Me,
yeah,
and George Wallace, well, who I am.
Well, I want to know, geez, you ask a six-year-old typically what you want to be when you grow up. I've never heard a six-year-old say they want to be a comedian. What inspired you to say you want to be a comedian at six?
There was a comedian named Red Skelton. You're not old enough to know Red Skelton.
I know Red Skelton.
I'm trying to make a joke out of it, but it was Red Skelton, there was a Red Fox, there was a Red Buttons, and there was a Pinky Lee. And now I'm saying all people of color. I'm trying to make a little, I'm trying to sneak in a joke there, but... Also, Mums Mabley, Judge Pickmeek Markham, and Red Fox, when I was a kid, I would listen to those party records, and I would hear Johnny Carson and Rich Brown, people like that, on the Tonight Show. And I would, Milton Berle, I would take those jokes back to school the next day and tell the jokes I just heard on TV, and the kids would go crazy. And so anytime they see me, they knew happiness was coming. And to this day, when I see happy people, it makes me happier. So that's how I became a comedian. A comedian always, and God has blessed me. I have a passion, and I thank God. Sometimes I choke up. I'm choking up right now talking about it. I have a passion for what I love to do because God has given me a gift. And all I do is lie. I just lie. I just make up stuff. I just lie. I love to lie. I told God I wanted to be the greatest BSer in the world, and Donald Trump is kicking my ass in that department. So I kind of lost out on that one. So I try not to mention his name anymore either, but he's trying to come back in the news. So I got to deal with it. But yes, I just love, since 6 years old, always wanted to do. How many people love what you're doing? That's what I like about you. We can see the smiles on your face when you work. And we're blessed to be able to do what we love, we have a passion to do.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, most people don't know your history, and thanks for sharing kind of all the things you've done outside of comedy, which, by the way, I think, given your life experience, which is why I find your comedy so good, because you draw on real life experience, you draw on observation, and I think that that is what appeals to me. I'm not a slapstick kind of guy, but your social observations are absolutely spot on. What I found interesting, and people who don't know you well would find this interesting, is that when you were really getting your start in New York, as a young comic, not making a lot of money, didn't have a big name, but you also ran in the same circles as a guy who has become your best friend. And I love it because when you think of George Wallace, someone sees and hears you on the radio, you don't think that he also is best friends with this other guy who you...
Jerome.
Yeah, that's right. Some guy, I think his name is Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, I call him Jerome. You know, Jerome, my best friend. You know, we started together back in 1976. He's a little Jewish boy sitting at the end of the counter, and I was a little black boy sitting at the other end of the counter waiting to get a spot and catch a ride and start. We sat there, we started waiting, and I had a car. Back in the day, if you had a car, he was everybody's best friend. That's how they could get around. But he and I became roommates for 13 years. So when you see the Seinfeld show and you see George, the roommate, I'm actually George, the roommate. So, and to this day, 45 years, we're still best friends. As I wrote in my first book, he's my best friend. I was his roommate for 13 years. I was best man in his wedding. And I'm the father of his kids. So... So, yes, so we started together, like I said, and we've already talked 3 times today. He's out in L.A. right now writing a movie called Pop Tarts. Yeah, so that's how blessed I am. To this day, the number one guy in comedy. So, you know, he made more money than all of us. And so I take advantage of it, you know. Hey, he's got a jet. I got a jet. You got a yacht. I got a yacht. So. But I'm so blessed to have him as a friend. I wish everybody had a friend like Jerry Seinfeld.
You know, it's interesting because I've been maybe to, honestly, don't be upset at me. I may have been to maybe 3 comedy shows in my life. Paul Mooney was one of them.
Stop.
It's the truth. George, it's the truth.
Listen to me. I got to tell you something because you're a doctor, right? And uh-huh. You're always jumping on people about you got to go to the doctor. You got to get checked. You got to get a checkup. That is your responsibility in life, is it not? You've got to see how your body is functioning. Now, I'm George Wallace, DC, Doctor of Comedy. You have got to get some laughter in your life because that is a part of living. When you stop laughing, you stop living. This is something you've got to know, okay? That's why I wrote my first book. I'm not as quick and fast as you, but my first book is called Laugh It Off. I know I'm holding it up. I know I'm on radio, but I'm holding my book up. Laugh it off. And you've got to keep laughing in your life. And we know, you being a doctor, laughter is the best medicine in the world. Yeah. That's why we encourage people to overdose on laughter. Keep it in the reach of children. And yeah. If you start laughing for more than 4 hours, then you call your doctor and give the doctor the prescription so the doctor can laugh along with you. So you get an F for not visiting your comedy clubs. You need to. And I, you know what? One of my doctors in Las Vegas, 3 of my doctors in Las Vegas, I made sure that they had tickets for all of their patients. When they're sick or something, whatever, I said, send them to the comedy show. They got free tickets and they came down and they always told the doctor, thank you so much. That laughter was really good. Because first of all my patients definitely feel better when they leave my show than they do when they leave the doctor's office. Okay? So I see all my patients at one time, never late. And I put laughter in their life. And so when I see them laughing, it's something I love to do.
Well, the 3 shows, Paul Mooney was one, God rest his soul, loved Paul Mooney, and you are one of them. This was several years ago, and you were doing your residency in Vegas, and I'll never forget this. I texted you because I saw you on the billboard, and I texted you and said, hey, can I come to the show? And you had everything set up for me. But that night, and I repeated this joke, George, so much, that night, I heard one of the funniest jokes, and maybe it was the situation also, because I like situational comedy. You called up 3 people to the stage.
Yes.
And you were having a joke off where they had to tell a joke against you and you told a joke against them. And I'll never forget this. To this day, I still laugh. There was a skinny white dude who looked very scrungy. Okay. And he came up on the stage, and the first guy does this thing with you, you tear him apart. The second guy does this thing with you, you tear him apart. This third guy gets up and he says to you, George, you are so black that when you get out of the car, the oil light comes on.
Yeah,
George.
That's...
George, it ended it. It shut every, even you were on your knees. It was so funny. And to this day, I just, remember how good I felt and how great you had me laughing the whole show. This guy had me laughing. And I have always enjoyed, whether it's on the radio or on TV, your ability to make people laugh. And by the way, it's an art. It's not something that everyone can do. I'm very bad at it, but this is a true gift.
Oh my God, I can't believe you just said something. I'm writing a joke on it right now about people saying, you just said there's something everybody can't do. I'm writing now, I'm tired of people saying stupid things like, people say they accomplish things and then they are so readily available to say, if I can do it, anybody can do it. You ever people say, if I can do it, you can do it. That's BS. You can't do what I do. You can't do it. And I can't be an accountant. I can't go down there and work with numbers. I can't operate like you. I can't be a doctor like you and know nutritional values and things like that. I can't do, people say, if I can do it, you can do it. BS. You can't do what I do. You know, people are saying stupid things. Even a lady said the other day, she said something to the fact that she says, I feel comfortable in my own skin. You know, you can't say stupid stuff like that to me. How do you know? You ain't never been in nobody else's skin. How do you know you feel comfortable? You might, I know I feel better in Jeff Bezos' skin, you know. I feel a whore. You know, Jeff Bezos, this is the guy, you know, with all the money. No, that's another stupid thing you're talking about, right, Johnson? Here's a guy, Jeff Bezos, made a spaceship, right? And he went out of space, and everybody went, people flew in to see the ship go up in the air. And it went up in the air, and it went to space, man. And the people said, wow. They were looking up in space. Wow. They said, that's cool. The spaceship was gone. And they went back in their car. Before they got back in their car, they turned around and they said, you back already? What was it, 11, 13 minutes? They spent billions of dollars to go out of space and back before you could get to your car. And just go like, you, just crazy stuff. I'm trying to make a joke. See, I start out on stuff like that. But I was just talking about feeling, the lady talking about feeling better in somebody else's skin. I feel better in Oprah's skin. I'm trying to write this. I feel better than Al Sharpton's skin. It's going to be a little tight. It's going to be a little tight.
Yeah. Rev has lost a lot of weight. George, it's interesting. You know, you've been doing this, like you said, for a long time, since you were young. And you have had almost all the experiences one can imagine. One of my favorite comics of all time, believe it or not, when I was a little kid, because my aunt, who I was living with at the time, had him on every night, was Johnny Carson.
Yes.
So even as a kid, and even though that was adult humor, I loved Johnny Carson. And that to me said a lot, that I as a kid could enjoy the humor of an old white dude who's telling adult jokes that most I didn't get, but there was something about him, his delivery, his timing that was amazing. How was it, and you worked with him, how was it being on his show and working with Johnny Carson?
Well, to do the Tonight Show was the summit back in the day. That was like, if you could get on the Tonight Show, you had it made. If you made it one time back in the day. The common denominator there was laughter. He brought laughter. You may not, timing, you may not have even understood the joke or the punchline, but you knew it was time to laugh. Because you were accustomed to the formula, you know, AB3 with the switch at the end, or 1-2-C, you know, you set it up with the premise, and then you got the substance, and then you got the punchline. Bam, you got them. So you knew that little system there. And anytime, laughter just works for anybody. You know, blind people laugh. See? See, like you're talking about saying, they just listen to it. You know? Like one of my good friends is Stevie Wonder, and we go to the same church. And I talk about him all the time. I just talked about him a month ago, Stevie said he wanted to move to Africa. And I'm going, Stevie, you're so crazy. You moved there. So I decided, so you know what we're going to do? We're going to send his ass to Atlanta. He won't know the difference. We're going to send him to Atlanta. He won't know the difference. Because there's so many black people that I was talking to Trevor Noah not too long ago. You know Trevor Noah's from Africa. I said to Trevor, have you ever been to my hometown in Atlanta? He says, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've been to Atlanta. I says, they're telling you, you're from Africa. You went to Atlanta. You never seen that many black people in your life, ever. I mean, I just go, and that's my hometown. And it's the black Mecca and everything. There's so many black people in Atlanta. And they own everything. That's why I like to brag about my city. Atlanta. Black people own everything there. They own Chinese restaurants. They got black people. They got oxtail fried rice. They got all kinds of. If you can't laugh in Atlanta, doctor, I tell you what, if you want to go, as soon as you get off the airplane, you just start laughing. That's what Africans do when they get off the plane in Atlanta. Go, holy, I've never seen black people everywhere. I can talk about it forever. So I wanted to drop Stevie wonder off in Atlanta because he wouldn't know the difference, you know. They talk some different dialects in Atlanta. Some people country. They got a section in Atlanta called College Park. No college, no park. But just but they don't. You've been there, and doctor, you know, they don't even call it College Park. They call it Calipar. So they talk funny. But in any case, yeah, seeing Johnny Carson, and at the time when we were kids, we listened to Red Fox and Miles Midway to the Dirty album also, and we just loved it. I don't know why parents think kids are stupid. They tried to hide. They didn't hide them. They just put them back. It was back there. So, and we knew they were dirty. As soon as they go to church, we put it on and laugh our butts off. And sometimes they'd be listening to them. We'd be in the other room.
Well, I remember, George, now you mentioned that. I remember when I was a kid and you'd listen to comedians on records. I remember Red Fox, who I knew from Sanford and Son. I didn't know he was a stand-up comedian, by the way. I just watched him on Sanford and Son. But my grandparents, my grandfather had a stash of his old records. And boy, and they would never play it when we were around. So sometimes we'd be upstairs and we'd sneak down the stairs. They couldn't hear us on the stairs listening.
Exactly.
And cussing up a storm. It was amazing. So, George, let me ask you a question. Here you are, a world-famous comedian. From your perspective and where you sit, you're the expert in this. If someone, and I know this is a tough thing to do, but if you had someone said to you, the top three comedians in your lifetime who you've heard, who would you list? In no particular order. What comes to mind?
Oh, my God. You know, Richard Pryor's going to be there. And there's a kid that nobody mentions much anymore, but I love me some Bernie Mac, okay? There's another guy named George Carlin. I hope you know him. Now,
yes.
I used to, I was reading one of his books. I hated him. I hated George Carlin. I was reading one of his books because everything you think you thought of, he already did. I'm reading his book. I'm not going to read this book anymore. I think it was called Brain Droppings. I said, I'm not going to read this book anymore. I even got to work with him on a movie called Working Trash. I loved this guy. But I hated him after I started reading his books because he was so in the, he had covered every subject. That's why when you do comedy today, people go, I did that already. Oh, you think you did it already? It's been done. It's been done. No matter what you're talking about, it's been done. George Carlin, prolific writer. He has books of the jokes that he's done, and he would see him come out on the stage and work out material. But this guy, I wanted to do a joke once on television commercials. Operators are standing by. I said, they're not standing by. They're sitting. I started reading his book. He did it 30 years ago. They're not standing by exactly. He did it 30 years. So now, comedy has been done. And actually, like I said, I've been doing comedy so long, some people are accusing me of stealing my own stuff. I did that back in Nicaragua. I did that in 1993. Oh, I heard someone else do that last week. I said, well, you check your books, check it out. Like, you know, I'm the guy that's known for walking out on the stage with a yellow pad, legal pad. Try out some new jokes. Might be funny, might not. I got to try out these new jokes. And somebody else started doing them about 10 years ago. And someone, you stole that from such and such. Check your books, check your records.
But, George, do you ever get nervous and, you know, being in front of a live audience or on TV and you got to try to make people laugh? How was that from a nerve standpoint?
Well, when you get into it, I'm the type of guy that's so screwed up. I have a set plan to do when I go a live audience, let's say television show or something of the nature. And I go on TV or the Tonight Show with Jay Leno back in the day, or Dave Letterman back in the day, or Arsenio, all of those guys. I would open the curtain. They would open the curtain. And I would go out and do completely opposite of what I had in my head I was going to do. So being nervous, I don't know. It's my sex and it's my drugs. I love doing stand-up. I could do it right now. I've been on stage for 18 months, but as you see, I'm getting into it. I love making people laugh. And I just got a call yesterday from Shaquille O'Neal and Kelly Clarkson and who else is it? Justin Bieber. They're doing a big show out in Las Vegas on October 2nd for homeless kids of the nature. And they wanted me to come be an MC because I always do it, and 15,000 people, and I just love doing it. This time I said, well, I haven't been on stage in 18 months, plus I'm still wearing my mask. Do I have my mask on? Yeah, I still have my mask. I'm concerned. I'm very, very, very concerned about the virus. So I said, you know what? I'm going to let this one go because that's 15,000 people in the same room, and I'm still trying to be safe. Trying to stay safe. My stage manager in Las Vegas 3 weeks ago passed away from COVID. So I'm a little shaky about it. And like I said, I wrote a joke about being away from being away from the stage 18 months, nobody comes into my house. I'm just like that. You know, the only people came into my house was Sarah Lee. I let her in. I let Ben and Jerry, they came in. And Johnny Walker, we kind of let Johnny Walker sneak up in there a little bit, you know, and so Jim Beam. So I love comedy. Being nervous, doctor, it's like, I can't wait to get out there.
Well, George, let me tell you something. Comedy is one of those things, like sports, by the way. Comedy, sports, music, they really can bring people together. And boy, do we as a country need something that can bring us together and to take down the level of stress, right, and anxiety and tension.
Doctor, I can't believe you said that, because during the time we've gone through, we've been quarantined and locked up, isolated, locked down, things like that. But don't I have a job? And, you know, with so many deaths in my family, your family, people we know, no matter what the situation is, you still got to bring some laugh in there. I don't care what it is at a funeral, you got to laugh. And thank God he's put me in a position to be able to deliver. My job is to try to make people happy no matter what. And when, like I say, laughter is so important to laugh. I just love laughing and always wrote the book called Laugh It Off, and that's what it's all about. I wrote another book called Bull Twit, also it's about the Twitter world. Matter of fact, if you want to learn about George Wallace, go to at Mr. George Wallace. I need more followers, okay? I need another 200,000 followers if we're going to get them from this show. 200,000, because right now I'm only at 877,000. I need to add on some more. But that's at Mr. George Wallace. I wrote a book called Bull Twit, because I talk to, you know, instead of bull, bull twit, and whatnot. And it's, I talk about little funny things about how poor we were growing up in Atlanta. And like I said, I just lied. We weren't that poor, but I just loved lying. We were so poor that when we watched television, we could only watch Saturn. We never knew there was a sun. And we're talking about things out being poor, and like when I got to Las Vegas, never knew about Marie. We knew that was a dunny, but we didn't know, because that's how poor we were and doing things like that. So poor, my dog only had one rabies. What else is in the book? Tweeting in the Twitter world, things I'll straight up do, like I'll eat cupcakes out of a pan, and I'll eat pancakes out of a cup. I don't play by the rules, doctor. I am different. I'll eat French toast in England, and I'll eat English muffin in France. I don't play by the rules. I'll drink a half a glass of whole milk and a whole glass of half and half. I don't give a crap. I don't play. One night in the audience, a lady shouted out, "Hey, Mr. Wallace," you know, because my show is open. People just shout out and feel comfortable. "Hey, Mr. Wallace, if you drink a half a glass of whole milk and a whole glass of half and half," she said, "you might not give a crap, but you're going to take one." So little Twitter things, and I talk about the top five inanimated objects, you know, about the top five bells in the world in my book, Bull Twit. Go online, Bull Twit. At georgewallace.net, buy yourself a book if you want some laugh in your life. I did the top five bells in the world. I did the Liberty Bell, Tinker Bell, Jingle Bell, Saved by the Bell, and number five. And then I get to the replies of the funny, the responses of the funny thing. People look right back to me and says, "Oh, Taco gets no love, huh? Oh, it's Taco Bell." I go, "Oh, my God." And then they said, "How about Bell Bottoms?" And they just start naming their top five. So life is fun, writing books and telling jokes once again. So it's awesome. I don't even know what your question was.
Well, listen, I'm going to wrap this up. We're going to do a part two sometime soon for sure. I'm going to wrap this conversation up, though, with my usual, which is Dr. Ian's random seven questions. These are random seven questions that you can give quick answers to. And I'm just
They're going to be random. These are going to be random. Go ahead.
Here we go. You ready?
Ready.
Tell me what you own that is really expensive and you don't feel guilty about.
Oh, I got a brand new car. I can give a damn about it. I bought a brand new Tesla, you know, the big one. I only drive, 2,000 miles a year. Doesn't do anything. I mean, you know, my best friend loves cars. He's got like 60 Porsches, all worth up to millions of dollars. Nothing for me. My car, nothing.
Okay. What makes George Wallace angry?
Discriminatory practices, racism, hate. Oh, that really makes me mad. More than anything else, racism. Ooh.
Who have you had a crush on in your whole life, and why?
The That was J-Lo for a while, but, you know, that was a line. Oh my life. What's that lady name? There was a lady in Italy. I forgot her name.
Sophia Loren?
How you know who it was? That's who it was? I said, you too, huh? That's a pretty lady. Janet Jackson at one time. I'm not too old, even as old as I am. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Who have you not met who you would like to meet and have dinner with?
Oh my God. I've been with Muhammad Ali. I know Oprah. I know. Oh my God. Who have I not met that I'd like to have dinner with? I'm so blessed, man. I'm from Atlanta. I've been at Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. Barack Obama, Clinton, I was at the White House. I don't know who would I like to.
You're stumped.
Huh?
I said you're stumped.
I'm stumped on this one, yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to meet, yeah, that I ever met.
That's fine. If you were not a comedian, what would you be doing right now?
I'd be vice president of an airline. I don't know why I put myself as vice president and not as supposed to be the president. Because I love flying and I love travel. I've been all over the world, from Shanghai to Singapore to Dubai. And when I'm on stage, I was in all those places yesterday. I was in Cleveland yesterday. I say that on stage, and after about 10 minutes, I'm going, I was in Dubai yesterday. People go, did he just say he was in Miami yesterday? Did he just say he was in Cleveland yesterday? And then finally, I said, I was in Chicago. They'll shut up. Yesterday, you go. No, I was in Chicago this morning. So there's a test right there. You know.
Oh man. Okay. Tell me, what does success look like to you?
Oh, let me tell you something about success. I'm the most successful person you've ever met or talked to. Did you know that, Dr. Ian Smith? Me, George Wallace. It's not how much money you make. It's how you enjoy your life while you're living. That's why I'm teaching these young comedians. Some of our so competitive, I'm going, just be you. Make sure you enjoy your life. Don't worry about being number one on top of the mountain. So far, I've figured it out that you notice everybody on top of the mountain, they also got no problems, they got no troubles. And that's, you look at everybody at number one. I don't care what. Number one, JFK, President of the United States, number one. Muhammad Ali, trouble. Arthur Ashe, trouble. Richard Pryor, number one. Eddie Murphy, number one. Just name any, Oprah, catch hell. Everybody catch hell at number one position. Don't worry about being on top of the mountain. Just be on your way up the mountain. Be on the mountain. I am so happy with life. The world owes me nothing. If I die tomorrow, the world owes me nothing. So just be happy. And you don't need to make all the money in the world. Just make enough. I'm so glad enough people know me. I was talking to Seinfeld and Anderson Cooper once. We were talking about fame and fortune. And which is better, I'm just going, you know what, I probably got it better than both of you guys. I got enough money to retire, do anything I want to do the rest of my life, travel all over the world. Enough people say hello to me to satisfy my little ego. But the difference in me and you two guys, you guys can't do this. I can go pee. They can't go pee. Why? Paparazzi's everywhere. And sometimes they walk out of, every day they walk out of the door. There's cameras on them. They don't even know this. TMZ and somebody follow them around just trying to get some. They get pissed off. They can't give people the finger like I can. You know, but success is great, and it is just it's what you want it to be. I figured that out. And my brothers worked at General Motors, and they were made $60,000-$70,000 a year. They got a house and two cars. They're doing just fine.
Our last question is very simple. 100 years from now, when people are reading about George Wallace, what do you want them to read?
Boy, did he enjoy his life. That's what's going to be on my tombstone. I hope you enjoyed life like I did.
George Wallace, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Dr. Ian Smith, I'm George Wallace. I love you, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
I love you too, man.
Conversations with Dr. Ian Smith is hosted by Dr. Ian Smith, associate producer Ariel Mancebo, executive producers Ian Smith and Ken Johnson. Find the Conversations with Dr. Ian Smith podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, or on IG at Dr. Ian Smith. Conversations with Dr. Ian Smith is a Mean Old Lion Media production.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.